that our first guest of the day, Máirtín Ó-Maolaodha, and Máirtín, of course, the former Lord Mayor of Belfast, publisher, Belfast Media Group, an Irish Echo newspaper, has served in politics for Sinn Féin in both the Belfast City Council and in the power-sharing executive at Stormont. And friends, want to welcome our friend Máirtín Ó-Maolaodha. Máirtín, how are you? Good morning.
Adrian, I'm fantastic, and I'm in your city. I'm in New York today, heading home tonight. Here for the Irish Echo 40 under 40, but always good to be here. And just to remind your listeners, when you talk about the power sharing executive, which is troubled, there would be no power sharing at all in the north of Ireland but for Irish America, because that concept of sharing of a place for everybody at the table came from the pressure from Irish America and the insistence that everyone needs to be at the table if there's going to be peace. So it's not a bad prologue, as it were, to our discussion today to even mention power sharing executive.
You know, Máirtín, we have, and I'm sure that the Irish diaspora worldwide, we've had so many expectations. We're nearly there, and with reference, of course, to Brexit, the protocol, and again, you know, the anxiety with respect to not having a power-sharing executive in Northern Ireland. Really want you to maybe give us a brief description of the protocol, what it is, and is that the sole stumbling block at this stage of the game to have, you know, a power-sharing executive in Stormont in Northern Ireland?
Well, and I think we are nearly there, but as President McAleese used to say, the peace process is a journey, not a destination, and who knows how long that nearly there will last, but it's very important that we get there peacefully. And you saw this week in Omagh, those who are opposed to the peace process and opposed to the Good Friday Agreement attacking a police officer training a soccer team at a outdoor leisure centre. So the threats to the peace from extreme loyalism, which remains very active, and from dissidents is very real. Despite that, if we sit down and we survey where we've been in the last 25 years now, and this is the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, it's clear that there has been progress, and there has been there is an inexorable change coming. And you know, Adrian, my hope is for a peaceful constitutional change. But I'm going to paint an optimistic picture of the next several months. And as you know, Adrian, we do things very slow in Belfast. And when I say I'm optimistic, I'm not saying it's going to happen next week. But we are going to get a deal on the Northern Ireland Protocol, which was part of the Brexit agreement, which the British government signed, and which they had buyer's regret about. And that deal will be between Brussels and London. It will have the support of Washington. It will have the support of Dublin. And actually, Adrian, it won't change very much. It will iron out some of the wrinkles in the Brexit agreement, which caused some silly stuff, like, for example, you couldn't move a tree from Edinburgh to Ballymena. And no one really wanted to stop normal everyday trade. So we're going to iron out some of the wrinkles. It will be presented in the most positive light possible for the DUP, who, as you know, were against the Good Friday Agreement, are refusing to go into government, so holding things up. But we need to keep our nerve, and the fundamental situation is that there will be no return to the hard border of the past. The border will continue to be in the Irish Sea, because it has to be there, because we continue to be in the European Union, in the single market and the customs union. So that's my first thing. I think there will be a deal. and I think it will be signed off at the highest level. And this idea of King Charles meeting Ursula von der Leyen, the President of the European Union, what that is doing is almost outflanking the DUP. It's giving a royal assent, a symbolic royal assent to the agreement. So the first foot will fall, and I think it will fall next week, Adrian, when we'll see London and Brussels signing off on a new protocol, or not a new protocol, more an amendment or an enhancement or a little bit of sub-editing to the agreement. But the fundamental text and the fundamental reality of how Brexit is handled will remain the same.
Well, Martin, we're obviously waiting, and so is, but I'd like to return just to what you had acknowledged and mentioned at the onset about the significance of American, call it intervention, or call it because there is a steadfast commitment by President Joe Biden to say, hey, no deal with us either. And how much does that play into the overall commitment of and the influence of America in the protocol, in the Brexit deal in general?
Well, it's the alpha and the omega of the peace process for us. Without America, there is no peace process. Without America, there would be no fair employment in Northern Ireland. Without America, there would be no allocation of housing on the basis of needs rather than giving housing to your friends. Without America, without Irish America, we wouldn't have had the reform of policing, which we now enjoy. So for me, the entire lifeline of the peace process is the Irish-American interest and intervention. President Biden has raised that to a level that you and I haven't seen in our lifetime, Adrian, because although JFK was perhaps the most Irish president ever, I don't think even JFK had the granular knowledge of the peace process and of the country that President Biden has, not least because of the internet, not least because of the many visits he's made to Ireland, not least because he's immersed in Ireland and in the Irish and the working class Irish all his life. So we've now raised Irish-American involvement to a level not seen before, and for me that's the foundation on which we can proceed optimistically. A new economic envoy for Northern Ireland has been appointed, Joseph Kennedy III, and he probably won't visit until this protocol new agreement or understanding is signed. But we have not only a sympathetic Irish-American administration, but we have a government, in my view, in Washington, that understands that we're now in the final stages of creation of a new insured island. And we're always mindful, Adrian, of the statement of the DUP, former MLA, now Belfast City Councillor Sammy Douglas from East Belfast, who said, a united Ireland may not be all that bad, but the 10 years of getting there could be pretty horrific. So we need to make sure that doesn't happen. And I think the American government, I think they're now in a place where they see change coming, and anyone who reads the runes can see that. So they want to intervene, but they want to do it as positively as possible. And for me, if Irish America wasn't there, I would not be optimistic. I'd be pessimistic. So, I'm always worried about a change in government and changing people coming into power. But in recent times, certainly in my lifetime, in my political lifetime, go back 40 years, the 31.5 million Irish Americans is the figure today, and there's even more than that, people who are very concerned about Ireland, but those 31.5 million Irish Americans are absolutely our trump card in trying to win now the peace, having delivered peace and having delivered progress for 25 years, moving forward to a truly transformed society. Irish America is really are absolute bedrock.
I want to ask you, Maureen, about the reality of investments in Northern Ireland. You have been at the helm, as evidenced this week, by the way, when you were in Florida to number one attend the Ireland Funds, the annual gala there in Palm Beach. And as you addressed the Ireland-US Council, that's the network of corporate America, also significant in that it is the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. But tell us, if you will, about the investment in Ireland. Maybe some of us in the United States will say, well, there's very little interest in American investment in Northern Ireland until everything is sorted out.
Well, I think political progress, a government in office, would obviously be a boon and an inducement to anyone thinking of setting up business in Belfast, north of Ireland. There's no doubt about that. And we miss that because, as you know, Martin McGuinness and Ian Paisley, God rest them both, and then later Martin McGuinness and Peter Robinson, did a great job of charming, if I may say that, Irish-American corporate leaders from Disney right out on the West Coast to your friends in Allstate and Chicago and Liberty and Boston. So the presence of a government, an activist government, and I know Sinn Féin plan to take the economic portfolio when the government comes back, will of course be a great bonus and boon to those who are trying to bring investment or trying to increase trade between the north of Ireland and America. However, it has been normalised to a degree that American companies will look at Belfast, it will look at Derry, but they have turned the Republic of Ireland into a European superpower. The rate of growth of the economy in the Republic of Ireland last year was 12%. I mean, that's the sort of figures that used to come out of China. And that is being driven by American companies. Even though the technology companies are experiencing some headwinds, American investment has transformed the Republic of Ireland. But in Belfast as well, we have Allstate, we have Liberty, we have City, we have Aero Spirit Systems of Wichita, Kansas. We have some of the greatest blue chip companies in America are in Belfast. Now, I think what we need to do now is we need to move in as we survey the landscape moving forward 25 years from the Good Friday Agreement, is to say, how do we engage more ordinary Americans who are retirees in encouraging investment in the peace process? And Tom DiNapoli, the controller of New York State, one of the great champions of the peace process, he committed $56 million of pension funds. So these are ordinary people, postal workers, teachers, civil servants. He committed $56 million of their pensions to invest in the north of Ireland, the border counties. And what I'm trying to do now is say to everyone in Irish America who was in a trade union which has a pension fund, is an alumnus or alumna of a university which has an endowment fund, which is in the city of Boston or Chicago or Philadelphia, to say to those who hold the pension funds, let's take a tiny little sliver and see can we invest in building up the economy of the border counties in Northern Ireland, because they are the weakest economies on the island at present. Get a return for the retirees, so it's good for retirees, but let's move this economy forward, because while the Dublin is absolutely a superpower, while Cork's doing very well, Limerick's doing very well, Monaghan isn't doing as well, and Donegal isn't, and we know that Fermanagh and Derry and so on, while they've had some economic success, doesn't rate at all, doesn't compare at all to the rate of economic progress south of the border. So, or sorry, not south of the border, but farther south and in the big cities of the Republic of Ireland. So, that's a new task which we've just taken up, a new cause. But I think it's going to increase. So we're going to see greater engagement. Nothing captures someone's attention than having money invested in a place. So I think we're going to see greater engagement in that way by ordinary Irish Americans in this next stage of the peace process.
Friends, my guest is Máirtín Ón Wheeler, indeed, who, in addition to his investment in media, has taken the lead and established the North Ireland Growth Fund, and that's with partners in Boston, which will raise $100 million in the U.S., largely from pension funds to invest in startup and early stage companies in the 12 northern counties of Ireland. Again, Máirtín, whereas politics and whereas investment is always, has a tinge of one-upmanship and whatever. The 12 counties, 6 counties of Northern Ireland, and the border counties, the 6 border counties, again, they have equal interest in having a huge investment incentive from from North America, and you're actually well underway with that. The border, non-border, the counties, the neighboring, the border counties on both sides of that, what hopefully will now be a mythical border. They have a lot of common interest, if you take the 12 counties.
Well, of course, and I apologize, Adrian, for leaving out Mayo, but we couldn't, that would have been stretching it too far. We got Sligo in because the International Fund for Ireland.
Yeah, no, that's all right.
Well, thank you, but when you think about...
Yeah, and Áine, by the way, excuse me, Áine has a nib on her that nobody ever mentions Longford, not even myself, but anyway,
When you look at Leitrim, for example, which is such a beautiful county, and yet it's only less than 40,000 people. Some of those counties not only did have they not recovered from the famine and the great hunger, but they were hurt by partition because those border counties became the periphery of the Republic of Ireland economy. They became, and then as Fermanagh became the periphery, and Derry, Armagh became the periphery of the Northern Ireland economy. But in the All Ireland economy, which has been nourished and nurtured for some time, but now has been transformed by Brexit because it really creates one economy on the island, the Northern Ireland Protocol. Those border counties actually become the centre of the economy. So this is now their opportunity. I saw the figures just this week that the trade north south and south north went up by about 30% both ways in the last year. So we are seeing huge change on the island, and it's going to, in my view, open a door for the border counties. I met yesterday with another great Mayo man, Brian O'Dwyer, and for 30 years, Brian O'Dwyer has been talking about how do we encourage investment. He's one of the people who talked about Hillary bonds back in the day, back in the 90s.
Yep.
How do you encourage ordinary people to say, we want to have a stake, we want to have a stake in the game? And that can only bring better times for the border counties as well. You know, when I go to Donegal occasionally, and it pains me to see how remote Donegal is from Dublin, and I'm not really talking in terms of miles, but you don't see the type of investment, you don't see the type of prosperity, you see young people leaving. So now we have a chance. A lot of things are happening, but the Northern Ireland Protocol of Brexit, which has created an all-Ireland economy, for me, in many ways, is the best thing that could happen. It will be a way to turbocharge the economy of those counties. And what we need to do now is gather capital. When I was speaking, I went to Washington, D.C. recently, I met some Congress men and women to talk about this fund, and some people were saying, oh, it's too small. The reality is that $100 million would be over three times the biggest equity fund ever established in the north of Ireland. So, but if it could be bigger and we had more money to invest in building turbines and building green batteries and creating green hydrogen and using the wind and rain of a place like Donegal to change society, that would be great. So for me, we're now we have a little opportunity, and I'm absolutely sure of this. When people decide to vote on the United Ireland, and we know there will be a referendum, we don't know if it will be won, but we know within 10 years there will be a referendum. And I know this, people will vote according to their pocketbook, according to their pocket. So we need to show that there are real concrete advantages to provide jobs for young people and opportunity through the all-Ireland economy. And if we can't do that, then in my view, we won't win the referendum in Irish unity. So there's big reasons, big imperatives for making sure that we build the economies in the border counties and especially in the north.
Right, and not in the competitive, friendly competitive, but it is one island, the island of Ireland, and indeed in steps like you have, like you have brought to our attention, this is going to happen in steps. The first, of course, being that the protocol that the DUP will in fact come on board quickly. You know the significance of the power sharing executive at Stormont, and in fact not only that, but you also are aware of the difference that's evident with respect to having, you know, something we've waited 800 years for, and that is to have, you know, an all Ireland, not a divided Ireland. But I think that Martin, like one of the recurring questions, and I know from your own expertise in media, the recurring question is, the Good Friday Agreement, the significance of the Good Friday Agreement, and for those who once in a while are getting mixed messages, the question we get mostly from our listeners is, you know, you keep talking about a border. Is there a border? Is there not a border? What are how are you defining this? If there is no border, then, what are you talking about? You want to tackle that one to some degree, at least?
Well, I suppose it's full citizenship and sovereignty and freedom. The great thing about there being no border is there's no British soldiers on the border either stopping us. I don't think that the DUP will come on board quickly, but I think they will come on board, and I think they'll come on board for the reason that Dr. Paisley said back in the day, for their children, because they're the children of the DUP supporters are as important as anybody else's children, and anyone who has any wit knows that while you can take a stand or march people to the top of the hill and down again, really for our children we need to find a way back into this power sharing executive, and that's the only answer to those who would use violence on our streets. So for me, I hear a lot now. I've been at a lot of events where people stand up and they talk about Ireland, and we're like sliced liver, because they're not referring to the entire country, the entire 32 counties. I would like to enjoy, in my lifetime, I would like to enjoy my full rights as an Irish citizen, to have the right to vote for a sovereign government in 32 counties. I want that to be a shared island. I want it to be a new union of our people. It can't just be bolting one part on the other and putting the boot treated on the other foot and treating unionists as Catholics were treated at the setting up of the state. But that's going to take a lot of patience, a lot of hard work. But it is, in many ways, I see that as my birthright. And my grandfather was a great Michael Collins man. He was shot in his home in May 1922. His brother shot dead beside him. He died, as it were, for Michael Collins. He died for the Free State. He was injured for the Free State, and his brother James was shot dead for the Free State government to help that be established. So it pains me terribly when I'm in the audience and representatives of the Irish government get up and they say Ireland is a country of 5 million people. And the Republic of Ireland is, of course. But, you know, I always think of my grandad who was shot 7 times, and he was shot to try and help establish the Free State. He was not he didn't side with the Republican side in the Civil War. He sided with Michael Collins. And so would you say, what does it mean to me to have a united Ireland or a shared Ireland or a new Ireland? It really means for me that journey from 1922 in a South Derry cottage where his three brothers were actually shot. That would be the culmination of that we win the to use an old fashioned word, we win the freedom to exercise and govern our own affairs, but we do it in a way which is respect for everyone and acknowledges that we have a British community who are as passionate about their Britishness as I am about my Irishness, and we're going to have to accommodate that and find ways we're in this transition at the minute, and we have to find ways at the minute to help unionists deal with change, because they have seen tumultuous change. Even since I was a boy, unionists have seen change in the city of Belfast, and even the fact that there's a power sharing executive. So it means a lot to me. It's my dream. And it's something that helps us get up every day and work towards it peacefully. You know.
Does, you know, and you spend a lot of time throughout the United States, as we might say in Mayo, drumming up business, not unlike, you know, the former greatest salesman that ever came out of Ireland in my book, John Hume. What is the reaction to, you know, to what you are doing in terms of getting major investment in Northern Ireland? What does the network of corporate Irish America, do they see what perhaps narrowly we might see is, well, you know, it's you know, that you know, Ireland seems as an island seems to economically be doing fine, or at least that's what we, you know, are led to believe. So you're talking to and you're encouraging corporate Irish America to come on and invest without, as some may think, you know, the Grand Macree, okay, your great granny came from Ireland. Corporate America doesn't care about that kind of stuff. What they want is to make a solid investment and get a return. So is the issue of, you know, they say the DUP, the political unrest in Northern Ireland, is that a downright interference with progress?
Well, it's a problem, but, you know, there's great investment going into the city of Chicago, and there were over 500 homicides there last year. So all around the world there are challenges. There was a lot of American investment in China now, and now that's gone into reverse because of supply chain difficulties and rethinking the global politics. So what I find it across Irish America, and some Irish Americans have done very well. Yesterday I was down speaking to one of the most senior figures in the banking world, an Irish American in the banking world, and what they say is, you make a compelling case about the peace process, and we're really, you know, that's been a great gift to our generation and to our parents' generation to see peace and an end to the violence and end the armed campaigns and reconciliation. And then they say, but how can we make a dollar or two for our shareholders, for our companies? And you have to have a compelling answer to that. And the compelling answer is that, well, look at these other companies. City of New York has 3,500 of the most talented software engineers on planet Earth in Belfast. Allstate of Chicago has around 2,000 in Derry and Strabane in Belfast. So first of all, we point to the forerunners who've made the investment and got a return. But we also point to the other thing that really is of great interest to businesses is the talent. And we have two world-class universities in Queen's and Ulster University. Ulster University, and you'll see this when you return to Belfast, Adrian, Ulster University has just made the biggest capital investment of any university in Europe. It has moved an entire university from Jordanstown, 7 miles outside Belfast, into the city centre and transformed the city centre. So you have to have the talent, and then you have to be able to prove that. And there are areas of business, and which I don't understand, which is financial technology, cybersecurity, and you know, which is the great bedrock of physics, which was always a speciality of Queen's University. And in those areas we are world leaders. So if you can put those pieces together, and you can do some work around taxation. I mean, most of the big companies are aware that the tax rate will go up to 15% in the Republic of Ireland soon. It was around 19% in the north of Ireland. It may go up farther than that. But there's other ways that you can ease that taxation obligation. They have to pay tax, but you can ease it to make a compelling case. And if we can do that and point out the advantages of that Brexit has delivered, this surge, and of course, we are now a special economic zone. When we sort this protocol, the only area in the entire European Union which can trade without any tariffs at all with the 65 million people in Britain and the 450 million people in the European Union will be Northern Ireland. So there's a good story to tell there, but it has to be a business story. And they like a bit of emotion when I meet these people, but then they say, that was fantastic, that story about the past and the progress you made. Now, tell me how I can make a dollar or two, because we'll invest mightily in your economy. We'll put our global resources behind you. We could be an agent of transformation, but you need to make sure that we will get a return on our investment. And I think we're saying that, and we'll get better at saying it if we can get back into government and get the protocol working as it was meant to, so we'll become a real powerhouse region.
Martin Amuro, friends, again, somebody who hasn't sat down over the period of the last 25 years. He keeps going and going and going, and we are delighted because you have, among other things, in addition to being a part of and a significant part of the peace process in Northern Ireland, you also have managed somehow to reach into corporate America and say no, here's where we are, and it will get better. And to that end, there's nobody else out there that we can compare your efforts to, but there will be more like it, so you got to keep on the stick there.
Let me say this before I go. I'm like yourself and Anya. I believe in the politics of addition and multiplication, not of division and subtraction. And that's how you've lived your life at Irish America. That's the way that I've tried to practice. The little bit of politics I've been involved with, or a little bit of business I've been involved with. But you know, I've just probably spent more time across America this month than I did in some time. I was in, I've been home each week, but I've been in New York, then I was in Washington, then I was in Miami, then I was in New York again this week. And the brilliance and scale and erudition, the richness of Irish America is absolutely breathtaking. And I have this opportunity, which maybe people in Yonkers or the 19th Ward in Chicago or the Irish of St. Thomas University in Houston don't see, but I get to see it all, and it all it's a thing of great wonder to behold. And I'm really enthused about the future of Irish America despite the many challenges. And your approach is absolutely central to that. It's been a great guide and a great a great instruction for people on how to do business. So good luck to you as well, Adrian. Good luck to you and Anya in the time ahead.
Thank you. Hopefully we'll be back and on to you very soon when, again, you know, they say, is somebody dead? No, you have to wait for 2 death certificates. When, you know, when the protocol, when that is done, and hopefully that will be in days, not in weeks and dragging on for months, we will definitely, want to hear from you and ongoing from that point. Of course, it can only go up from there. Marcin Omwilo, indeed, you're always welcome, my friend and our friend, as a guest on IrishRadio.com, Irish Radio Network USA. And again, thanks, Marcin.
Thank you, Peter. Slán go fóill.